And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 860. I'm going to talk some May hitting standouts, some big injuries that have dropped over the last 24 to 48 hours, some strategy as we're getting close to the halfway mark in the fantasy baseball season, and much, much more. And we'll probably, you know, we talked for 15 minutes about the Giants before the show. Something tells me it might end up on the show as well, just because that's what we do. But I have a special guest joining me on the show, a friend of ours, friend of the show. You can find him on FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. He's on the Twitter at Booms62. Jason Anthony, how you doing, my friend?
Bubba, it's good to talk to you, man. Good to see you. You know, fellow Giants fans, got to commiserate and keep each other a little level-headed, right? You know, it's easy to kind of get too down in the dumps, but with our boy Bryce Eldridge, the future looks bright if they can surround him with the right pieces. But at 21, man, pretty special player. And I'll just get this out of the way, me lamenting about you beating me in the tiebreaker in our auction, from our Vegas auction together, the 22-22 bid. I guess that's what I get for being a cheapskate, not going 23 on him, right?
No, that's just what you get for being much, much better than me in the league. That's what you get for it. That's the joke I've been making when on the Fab Recap with Ben. We go over our moves, and I always do my Vegas moves. And I think in like the last 4 or 5 weeks, ever since the Eldridge one, I've had at least 3, if not 4 bids straight up matched. And I win every once. That tells you what's going on this year. But I'm on the move. It's kind of.
We're seeing. Got him right where you want him, Bubba.
Yep. Well, by the way, okay, see, this is what's going to happen on the show between us. First off, it's been awesome watching Eldridge. Yes, we can talk about that all day. But you're in the league with me, obviously. John Posma, I know we know he's really, really good at this, but he's a problem. Because for the first like month and a half of the year, he was in the bottom. Like I was like, oh, I'm ahead of Posma. What's going on? He's up to, I think, like 5th place tonight. Mm-hmm. And he's just like cruising every day. It's like another point or two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason he's this good. I just wanted to give him a shout. I don't know if he listens to the show or not, but it's darn impressive watching him, because I'll watch some of his fab moves throughout the week. I'm like, yeah, that guy wasn't really like a priority for me or this or that. And the dude's just, there's a reason he's really good. So I just want to shout that out, because it's cool to see in a league. I just think the first league I've been in with him. So it's pretty impressive.
It's these good players, how they operate in the margins. You know, I can't wait someday to be that good, because again, you know, he's picking up guys that aren't even on my radar or down my list, and they're working out for him, and he just knows how to maximize the team in front of him. You know, and there's seasons where I can't fix it. Luckily my auction teams are in good standings this year, under like my main team, so maybe I'll just quit doing snakes and just do auctions moving forward.
Well, I remember, I think, wasn't okay, I might be speaking out of turn here, but I know you did what, 3 auctions in Vegas or just 2?
Yeah, 3.
3, yeah. I know 2 of them are doing very well for sure. Maybe all 3. I might be missing that. But I remember, I think last year you didn't do the main live. You did it this year. And you were even kind of like, you know what, I just like doing auctions. I don't really, you know, but I'm going to do the main. And then look what happens. And it's just 1 year. A lot can change, obviously. We know this. But it is crazy how that kind of changes. Because, yeah, you're the crazy one that does multiple auctions in the same day. And I just don't know how you pull that off. But I guess, again, we're going to kind of mix in strategy throughout the show for the listeners out there. But you mentioned it, and I said it to Ben recently. It's I'll have my waterfalls. I know you probably do, too, when we're doing our fab. And it's always those guys at the bottom for super cheap, and you'll see, like, the Posmas or other players pick them up. And I'm sitting there going, why didn't I just, like, you know, why am I going for this thing here? Why not just settle for the bottom? I guess what I'm going to ask you is, how do you, I guess as the season goes on, per se, how do you focus on your cheaper bids? Is it more statistical basis? Is it positional basis? Obviously, the easy answer is team by team. But when like a John or a Mager or some of these guys that are always doing very well, they're looking at something when they do this. It's very clear. Like there's upcoming schedules. There's a million factors. What's your, I guess, routine on trying to decide how your waterfall sets? Because that's always a question some people have.
You know, I think we look every week after we get our players, and we're initially happy about the players, and then we look a week or two later and like, man, I wish I didn't get that guy and I got the guy below him. And it's that imperfect science, you know, kind of like very similar to in the auction when you have a tier of pitchers, right? And I'll just take the next guy, you know, because I feel value these guys similar. Sometimes it can work, but most of the time it bites you in the butt that you don't get the guy that you had ranked higher because you had a similar player next to him. You know, it's a lot of it is having the confidence that those $1, $2 guys are going to play this playing time, because obviously with Fab, we need the playing time. and two produce. But if you cycle through enough dollar, $2 guys, you're going to hit on a couple season long. And then you're also, you know, the weekly game that we play, because it doesn't matter as far as, you know, what the name is, you're getting stats on the paper. And so, you know, I think we all get caught up in this new shiny toy in the fab, and that $70 guy. I mean, even that $14 guy versus that $1 guy, right? And those add up over time when they fail, especially when the $1 guy can outproduce them, you know, we'll call it 40% of the time. So that's why these guys are the best, you know, and they're up there consistently. You know, fantasy baseball is, they can say it's luck all you want, but it's definitely a game of skill, because the same people win year over year.
Yep. You got to stay healthy. That's the luck part of it all. But building the team in the draft room and then throughout the season is a definite skill they possess. And to your point, the shiny new toy, it's something I've been trying to work with, and doing 15s versus 12s is always tricky, because 12s, you can just shoot for the moon and then you can get dollar guys all year. It's no big deal. 15s, like in our auction, for instance, my pitching's just been bludgeoned throughout the season. And so anytime I see a guy with a pulse, I'm in. So like David Sand, then I'm like, okay, $12. I was 12 to 12 is the same bid. And I end up getting him. Obviously, he's back in the minor leagues, and it wasn't great. And I'm sitting there going, man, maybe I should have got, like, you know, so-and-so for $4.
Nick Sandlin?
Yeah, Nick Sandlin would have been a lot more productive. Very true. But it's just those kind of little things. Captain Hindsight's always, you know, perfect. But it's just looking back on things, you always got to try to make yourself better, learn from it, and see where it goes. And that's why I said, like, I wanted to just bring it up, like, watching. Like, I think it's awesome being in this league with you guys. I know it's not the price point everybody can play. I'm well aware of that, but first time doing it, and I'm playing with so many guys in that room that are just really, really good at this game. So to kind of watch them throughout the week, the moves they make and how they do it, it's pretty awesome. So it's a great learning experience for sure.
Yeah. It's paying for lessons, right? And then we're all doing it. And you know, if we can get better for the following year, let's do it. And, you know, one little tip, 1% better.
That's the goal. 1% better. Anthony Kim, baby. Yeah. All right. Let's talk some news here. Garrett Crochet, man, this was a bombshell. Like, he was supposed to be getting ready to throw a bullpen and, you know, thinking about rehab, coming back late July, probably. Now they're saying the lat injury that shut down his rehab is worse than expected. Garrett Crochet does not have any idea when he'll be able to even just play catch again, let alone, you know, ramp up. So this feels like now we're talking August at best. With Crochet, and a couple people dropped him this past week. That's why I'm bringing this up. I think in 12s it's a clear drop, but you play a ton of 15s. If you're a Garrett Crochet manager, where are you sitting on this one?
You want to talk about, you know, the blessing in disguise. I had Crochet above Skeens in my rankings. I have zero Crochet in my big leagues, including a main where Crochet went right in front of me and I got Skeens instead. You know, I think it's a pretty easy drop at this point. You know, we all know with starting pitchers, even when they come back, the amount of time it takes them to ramp up to that 5-inning mark to even be eligible for a win really takes a while. So even if he's healthy and, you know, end of August, moving into October or September, you're not going to get enough out of that roster spot to use that. You know, there's an argument to be made to wait for a little more news, a little more clarity before dropping that type of arm. I mean, you're talking a top three drafted arm, top two. But those roster spots, those seven bench spots are so valuable, and to just sit on that and not get anything probably the whole year. On top of that, the Red Sox are not very good. So what impetus do they have to bring him back or rush him back? There's not a lot of reason for that, and I don't see that turning around anytime soon. So unfortunately, I think you're going to see a significant amount of drops in the 15s this weekend. I'd probably say 70% drop, 30% owned after this weekend, if I had to guess.
That's probably pretty fair. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mentioned it in the Bubble and the Bloom Discord. I'm like, yeah, it's a clear drop for me, guys. 12s and 15s for me. I need that roster spot at this point in time, unless I am feeling good about life. And it'd be one thing if I knew there was a timeline at the moment, but Crochet's literally has no clue what's about to happen. So that does not make me feel good. I'd assume by Sunday we'll have hopefully a little bit clearer answer on that situation. Ronald Acuña Jr. Here we go again, Booms. The guy is, I compared him to going down the Mike Trout path right now, which is a shame because he's an elite talent, but cannot stay on the field at this point in time. Hamstring injury, they're saying grade one. They're saying it's better than the one that had him on the IL earlier this season, but there's still no timeline for return. which makes me question that whole diagnosis, because less than 24 hours ago, he was fine and day-to-day, and they expected him back later this week. So we know how that goes. What's your thoughts on Acuña? You're not going to drop him, but how are you handling what kind of setback does it take to, or what kind of timeline before you move on?
You know, there's not a lot of actionable advice I can give. I don't think anybody's dropping Acuña for a grade one hamstring strain. It's a shame, because baseball's better when he's healthy. He has not been the Ronald Acuña that we know this year. He has not been the same guy. These injuries are going to continue to cause that, you know, performance to lack too once he's back, because he's got to get back used to pitching, major league pitching, and the steals are not going to be there. Kind of another lost season, and that Mike Trout comparison's pretty close. You have just an all-world talent that all of a sudden cannot keep his body healthy, and I really think us as a fantasy industry have kind of took for granted about how quote unquote injury prone he is. I mean, what does he have, one full season in the last five?
Yep. That's bad.
It's bad. And you know, I had him all the way up to, I think, number four on my rankings. Again, blessing I didn't get him. And so I'm not really worrying about him. I have him in a long-term keeper league, which is what it is, but nobody's dropping Ronald Acuña 12, 15, 10, 8. It's unfortunate. You kind of got to grin and bear it. And I don't think there's any really actionable items. I don't think anybody's picking up Rowdy Tellez this weekend to save their teams. And so who's the call-up for Acuña going on the IL?
And that's the weirdest part. Like, they called up Rowdy, and I'm like, that doesn't seem like it matches up in the replacement department. But I guess we'll see what they do here in the next few days. But yeah, it's a shame. Hopefully, it is a short-term situation. Mm-hmm. Similar to this changed quickly. O'Neill Cruz was literally in the lineup for the Pirates on Tuesday. Got scratched last minute as he's still dealing with, they said, a wrist injury. Well, he went on the IL with a fourth and fifth metacarpal non-displaced fractures. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. It could lead to 2 months potentially for O'Neill Cruz, who is actually hitting for average this year. He's hitting lefties this year. He's looking like the guy so many people wanted to see for a long time, Booms. O'Neill Cruz, like, literally this could be a month, maybe 2 months that you're going to miss him, which means we're into August, middle of August potentially, if it gets real south. What are your thoughts on Cruz?
You know, I have the same kind of issue with Luis Robert. And I just dropped him in the main last week. And my brilliant preseason strategy is I moved Robert ahead of Cruz, and so that looked really smart for up until never. O'Neill Cruz is tough because his upside when he comes back, you know, everybody's worried about power being sapped with a wrist injury. You know, hits the ball so hard, I don't know how much power that will sap. And if he gets back, and the Pirates seem like they can hang around in contention, so which might get him back a little quicker. He's going to run when he's out there. He looks like he might be figuring it out. So I'm going to hold him in a 15. I'm probably going to hold him in a 12 until I can get some more news. If that timeline moves to 8 to 10 weeks, that math changes for me. But, you know, and you're looking the 4 to 6 weeks initial, I think it's a hold for me.
Yeah, I'd wait a little bit longer if you can. I'm with you on that one, just because what he can do, power, speed, and he's actually hitting for average, like we said, changes a bit with Cruz. Will Smith of the Dodgers is expected to land on the IL with his neck injury. I believe it's been made official as of the time of this recording. It's kind of some weird news throughout the day. I bring this up because you're not dropping Will Smith unless you're just fed up with him, which I've always had my jokes about Will Smith. It's more so like my question for you about Dalton Rushing, who early in the season, it seemed like every time he was at bat, he was going deep. He has 8 home runs. It was just amazing. But hitting the skids is probably putting lightly what has taken place with his offensive production over the last month or so. But now he's going to get every day at bats. So it's kind of a yin and a yang situation here. If you are in need of a catcher too this weekend, obviously you don't have to give prices or anything, but how interested would you be in Dalton Rushing right now?
Didn't he have like one run and zero RBIs in the month of May?
Yeah, it was horrible. Like, absolutely dreadful.
And talk about the most least likable guy in the major league. Sorry, Dodger fans. I don't care. He's a bum. But catching, as good as it is this year, and you are the catcher whisperer, catching's as deep as it's ever been. we always can use catching. And so I think rushing is going to be a sought after commodity. I have Will Smith in one of my auctions. I got to really dive in and see what I'm going to do, because we all know how painful it is to carry three catchers. Yes. This injury went from a day to day to being, you know, he'll be in the lineup tomorrow to now on the IL. So it might linger a little bit. There's some research that needs to be done, but Dalton rushing's a lot of things, but he's talented. It's still the Dodgers lineup. And maybe if I pick him up, I can change my team name to something besmirching of the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's real crazy. It's always the worst because they're so good. They have so many talented guys. So you end up having to roster somebody. You're like, now I got to root for this. This is horrible. But that's the game we play. Last bit of news here. Nothing you can really do yet, but keep an eye on the weekend, folks. Matthew Boyd, he's expected to return this weekend against the Giants. That is not happening. As he threw a bullpen session, shoulder soreness. He's been kind of shut down for the time being. Just give him a couple days to rest. The Cubs are hoping it's minor, of course. It's just weird because he went on the IL with a back injury. Now he's dealing with a shoulder injury. I know a lot of us, especially in 15s, he did all the pitching you could get. We were kind of excited, at least I was, to get Matthew Boyd back. So this is a bit of a bummer, but I think you're holding, obviously, but I wanted to throw that one out there, Booms.
Yeah, I don't have any Boyd. He's talented enough to hold a little bit. One of my buddies I talk a lot of fantasy with, he always says this, and it's so true. These pitchers that try to get back from injuries that are not arm injuries usually cause another injury. And this is now a shoulder injury from having a back injury. That's the whole kinetic chain of the body. Boyd isn't good enough to hold for a long time. So we're going to need some news quickly to see what that is, but he's good enough to hold for a week or two. But you also don't want a 70% Matt Boyd. You want him 100% healthy when he's out there. The Cubs rotation is in absolute shambles. Thank God for Ben Brown. I held him for as long as I did, because he's been amazing. Boyd's right on that cusp of, if you need the roster spot, I would drop it. But I would try to be holding him.
Yeah, I would try to hold to just hope it's a minor thing. But when I start hearing shoulders, elbows, it's rarely minor. Like Joe Ryan beat the novelty this year. Everyone else seems to miss a good amount of time. All right, the primary focus of the show, we're going to discuss some hitters from May, a handful that were really good that maybe surprised people, and then a bunch that have been really bad, and kind of what do we want to do with them going forward. And I like this. I didn't leave him on the sheet because he's having a great June, but Matt Chapman comes to mind as a guy that was really bad, but he's turning things around. With those kind of players, do we sit and wait? Do we see something actionable in that regard? Or are we calling it a day on some of them? So we'll start with, I guess I'll ask you this. Here's a try. When you're looking at players to analyze for add drops, all that kind of stuff, I like to look at the last couple of weeks, maybe a month, depends on things going on. Ben loves 3-week samples. What do you prefer when looking at kind of a player's profile, and especially when you're looking to add a guy, like recent production wise, I guess?
First thing I look at is the last 7 days playing time. How many at bats? Where is he at in the lineup? Is he platooning? I go back to 14 days. I really focus initially on my research on these guys on year-long production. And then the big thing for me is this year versus last year, and kind of gauging it from there. And then if I really like the guy and I'm having some, want to see how much I want to bid, then I'll start breaking it down into 14 days, I think, is probably a good number for myself. But I'm usually looking at season long. So you put, May performers, all the numbers I put in my sheet doing some research for this pod was talking about season long numbers, and a bad April and a hot May. Guess what? We're at a season long average now. Cause we know baseball's a game of runs, and just because a hot month, that doesn't mean who they are. And we all saw Giants fans, what Matt Chapman looked like, a pitcher up there hitting. And now all of a sudden you can't get him out. And so it's ebbs and flows, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like I was forever a 12 teamer, and I've been slowly doing more and more 15s. Like at 12s, I dropped them because you can turn around and do things. I dropped them a while ago. 15s, I still have them. I'm like, wow, it's kind of nice knowing I didn't have a good replacement, so I stuck with them, and now it's working out. It's just the two different formats essentially that are really crazy, because I would never have faulted someone to do it in a 12 or 15. It's just like, yeah, you got to have the right replacement. And third base didn't have many of those going forward. So I guess I'll flip it back on the other side. As you talked about this for your ads, let's just use Chappie as an example. Like, what do you look at if a player's struggling? Like you said, you're still looking at full season overall production. I know we could look at the back of the baseball card, that old adage, guys will find their level as the season goes along. But like in season stats, I guess, what are you looking at to be like, okay, this is a bad slump. There's no denying that, but I'm not giving up on this producer just yet.
Yeah. There's a lot of quote unquote under the hood numbers that we're looking at to kind of predict the future. I think Manny Machado just came out yesterday and had a whole, we're getting too analytical, we need to stop that kind of thing. It sounded like a guy hitting 168. But there is something to this, and we all know this, a back of the baseball card for veterans, every single year they end up getting there. And so, regression goes both ways. When they're struggling, it goes the other way too, and they're going to get hot. So, it's one of those things. A couple of the data points I'm looking at, barrel rate's a big one for me. Again, year over year, K percentage, and then XWOBA is another big one. And then I'm looking at max EV, and then I'm looking at splits in the WRC plus versus left-handed versus right-handed to see if they're going to maybe start losing playing time.
I like it. Yeah. And this is why I love having so many different guests on the show. Cause I look at a lot, I'm always digging into players. So it just seems like things are always coming around, but you hear a lot of similar stats getting thrown out there. So it's good to hear some of these kind of stat cast numbers. You're looking at the XWOBAs, the EVs and all that kind of stuff, which is very good. I love the splits. That's one of my playing time is one of my most important things to look at. It should be for many people. So I'm not saying I'm alone on that one, but it checks out. All right, let's get to some of the solid producers in the month of May. And this is where, a bad April, a good May. Michael Busch is hitting 247 as of June 10th. So things are looking a lot better. That's because of Michael Busch's May, where he hit 300 on the month, four homers, 24 RBIs, which is pretty, pretty good. And that's to come, like I said, off in April, where we saw 193 average and two home runs. Like I said, he's sitting pretty now. June's off to a decent start. Are we good to go with Michael Busch, or do you still have any slight concerns on maybe playing time or just overall production with him?
No, I think it's wheels up. Going back to those numbers, K percentage match last year, so he's not striking out more. He's not barreling the ball up as much, but 17% last year is a hard number to repeat. The key thing for me was the 107 WRC plus versus left-handed pitching. On top of the Cubs really don't have a platoon partner for him. It's one of those things, the playing time. These guys are able to play their way out of slumps much quicker if they can play every day rather than being start jerked around on the bench and, you can't hit this lefty or do this. So I think Michael Busch is going to be right the value where we drafted him this year, going around 7-9 in 15 teamers, and you're going to be pretty happy with him into the year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And the one thing I'm really curious to see is I wrote about him in the offseason. He had a monster second half, especially in the barrel department and the power department. And maybe he's just a slow starter. It's a joking thing at times for some people, but it goes back to that back of the baseball card thing. Like maybe they just start out slow, and Wrigley weather in April's not the best. So maybe he gets things going, and it's good to see a former Dodger producing outside of LA. All right. PCA. This is one of the more polarizing draft picks this season for pretty much most involved. I think when we were at Vegas, if your name wasn't Eric Albright, you're having trouble getting PCA out there. And he had the month of May where he hit 233, four homers, 14 runs, 13 RBIs, six steals. Okay, that's good. April, well, the average wasn't good, but the production was. April, 241, three homers, similarities, six steals as well. I know this was talking about May players, but June, he's fuego right now, speaking of PCA. So with a profile like PCA, how are you going about things with him? Or are we you're going to take the good with the bad and roll with it? Or did you have any concerns before this last 10-day hot spell?
I didn't understand the PCA hate once we got to Vegas. It seemed like everyone was kind of negative towards him. I looked at the first half versus second half last year, and his numbers did not tank as bad as everyone you made it out to be. His counting stats did, but the actual numbers underneath were not as bad. And he's gonna be maddening. He's gonna have weeks where he's gonna struggle. He's not gonna be a batting average asset, but you're talking a true 30-30 player with an upside to probably, you know, in that perfect season, talk 40-40. The guy is electric. You know, I was watching the Giants-Cubs game, you know, and I think it was Sunday night, and it's true. You know, he wants the ball in his hand. Bottom of the ninth, give him the bat. You know, you see so many athletes shy away from that moment, and, you know, it just helps them produce in those big moments when they're confident enough to do that. So give me all the PCA you can. You know, barrel rate still over almost 12%. You know, last year was 13%. His ex-WOB was at 354, which is great. Max EV is almost at 115. It's about as hard as you're going to see other than O'Neill Cruz. And again, WRC plus versus left-handed pitching. He's a left-handed hitter, 132.
That's outstanding.
That's outstanding.
It's almost Bryce Eldridge-esque.
Yeah. Almost, you know, same speed profile too.
Yeah, just take some fewer steps. It's okay. All right. I'll try to limit the Eldridge love on the show, but it works around here. Those two, Bush and PCA, are kind of like, okay, yeah, you're sticking with what got you here. I for the most part, this one's interesting. JJ Bleday, we've played this game long enough, Booms, that Bleday is the kind of guy we've streamed, we've been frustrated with, we've seen streakiness when he was with Oakland. He goes to Cincinnati, gets called up, and in the month of May, the dude hits 301 with 8 home runs and 25 RBIs, and like the plate discipline's been very, very good. And he hasn't slowed down in June, which is, he has 11 home runs now on the season hitting 270. Where are you at on JJ Bleday? Are you just running it till the wheels fall off and getting ready to drop? Or are you thinking this is like a dude that he's 27 and figuring it out?
This is the real deal, I think, Bubba. You know, he was a big prospect. I think I might be mistaken. I think he started on the Marlins and went to the A's.
You are correct.
And now he's on the Reds and really getting a chance. And he figured something out. You know, he dropped his K rate 7%. It's under 20% now. Barrel rate over 12%. You know, max EVs at 112. You know, he's even hitting left-handed pitching. He's at a 94 WRC plus, and he's mashing right-handed pitching at 164. So between that ballpark heating up in the summer, dropping the strikeout rate, the prospect pedigree, I think we might have a breakout player on our hands for the rest of the year here.
Yeah, there's always a couple that are those early fab pickups that turn into just absolute gold. And for now, Bleday's looking like one of them. So if he could stick, like, I saw a lot of like $5 wins and stuff like that. These are those ones, like we started the show talking about those cheap air ads that you just kind of roll with and see how it goes for a week or two. This is one that might stick for a long time.
Yep.
Sedan Rafaela. Now, talking about, like, we talk about PCA's polarizing draft profile. Rafaela seemed like you either loved him or you hated him just because you didn't know what to do with him. Type thing. Like, there is, you know, you played him at second base, you played him at outfield, he's got the 2020 profile, but does he hit for average? Like, there's a lot of questions in draft season. And in the month of April, he left you with questions still, because he hit 263, fine, but only one home run and zero steals. Like I said, the 2020 profile, where's the speed? Well, in May, we hit 286, 4 home runs, 6 stolen bases now, which was a much better improvement from Rafaela. He even went deep today as we recorded on June 10th. So are we just, again, he feels like a really good 15-team profile where you're just like, okay, good floor, let's roll with it. But I know a lot of people that were just jumping ship before the month of May. So what are your thoughts on Sedan Rafaela?
Yeah, I think it was easy to jump in a 12-teamer, a 15-teamer. You weren't going anywhere just with the dual eligibility. You know, there was a lot of smart people on him. I thought his draft cost was a little high for the profile. But what the group said that was drafting him, if his swing decisions keep getting better and if he ever moves up in the lineup, which did not look like it was possible based off the depth chart on the Red Sox, guess what? He's batting second now, which is going to turn into more steals, more runs, more RBIs. You know, I still don't love him. You know, barrel rate's actually down, but him batting second with that speed power profile, I think it's going to be a win of a draft pick from where he was going, which I had no shares. Like, it felt like the draft champion's cost just kind of carried over into the fab season, and he was higher than he should have been because of that.
Yeah, good point. I'm curious if he can, obviously, maybe it was a his best month of the year in May potentially. But if he can just dupe, like, get close to 3 to 4 homers and 5 to 6 steals every month, my goodness, what he could return for you. As you say, he's going to play every day. Red Sox don't have a choice in that matter. Mm-hmm. Travis Bezanis. So let's talk about a prospect that got called up here. And going into the season, I think a lot of people thought maybe late in the season we'd see Travis Bezanis get his first, you know, cup of coffee with the team. But Guardian said, not so fast, my friends. They called him up at the end of April. So the month of May, first full month in the bigs, he hit .311 with 3 home runs and 8 steals. I will preface this now. It's only been 8 games in June. .125 with 1 home run and 1 steal. So the reason I asked this one, because the first few guys have kind of got a track record. We know this, that, and the other. We don't have a track record for Bezanis. We know that prospects, you know, I remember Kruko said it for years. We've listened to him broadcast. It's always like when a prospect comes up, they're like, okay, can you hit a fastball? Okay, good. Now they adjust to you. You have to adjust to them. That's how the game works. Right now, it looks like they've adjusted to Bezanis. So where are you at on a guy like Travis Bezanis, where the answer could be as simple as you're not going to start him, but don't drop him. That's fine. But what we saw in May was darn right impressive.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of those things, you continue to play him when against right-handed pitching. He came up and he's smashing against right-handed. He's really struggling against left-handers. He's at a 49 WRC plus against lefties, a 146 versus righties. It's a speed profile that I think everybody enjoys. I thought Bezanza was going to be a much better baseball player than a fantasy player, you know, number one overall pick. I thought he was going to be kind of the Jackson Merrill that just, you know, produced across the board, but it's kind of overrated in fantasy. But I was shocked to see how much he ran when he came up. The thing I really like about him is dropping his K rate from the minors to the majors. That's hard to do. You always see that tick up 2-3%. But, you know, really low barrel rate, you know, not a high max EV. He's going to be a startable second baseman, probably a streaming second baseman off your bench in 12 teamers, startable in the 15 teamers. But I think there's going to be some rough stretches, as you pointed out, as the pitchers adjust to him, find his weak spot, because we know how good these pitchers are and they'll just continue to exploit it until he shows he can adjust back.
When it comes to these prospects like Travis, we've seen a bunch of them this year. We got a couple coming up this weekend. Braden Montgomery is looking like the real deal. It's only been 2 games, so let's, you know, tone it down a bit. But you know what I'm trying to get at here? Bryce Eldridge was added for a lot of money, dropped, picked up for $22. It's crazy how that goes. But when it comes to prospects, I'm usually very cautious in adding them. But some of these guys have been awesome. There's no denying that. Like, I wish I had a month of .311 with 3-8 from Travis Bezanis playing second base. Like, that'd be pretty sweet. When it comes to Fab, how do you approach the prospects? Because it seems like some people are either like, I don't even want them on my roster. Some people, like our buddy the Guilds, if he goes bonkers for him. So like, where are you at on the prospect game?
I think I'm evolving each year.
Kind of
each,
where I'm at. So it's fair.
Yeah. You know, human nature is to see the unknown and see the 90th percentile outcome and really kind of dream on it. You know, we have the Acuna, we have the Fernando Tatis, those years that they come up, the Soto, and really just change the game. But for every one of those, there's 19 of them that don't work, especially with hitting. There's such a learning curve. I mean, even Mike Trout got sent back down. I mean, think about that. That's how hard baseball is, and how, and pitching's never been better than it is today. The velocity, the spin. I mean, they never throw a fastball on a fastball count anymore. So I can't even imagine with the good hitters how good they are. So I'm trying to temper my expectations with the younger guys. That being said, my biggest fault in fantasy is speed deficiency. And what do young guys do? They run. So I'm trying to balance getting some of them without going nuts, with that. So, I think the pitchers are probably more capable to help you immediately, you know, the Peyton Tolle, rather than the hitters, but you know, there's going to be a hitter that pops. Can you get it right?
No, and that's a great point, especially looking at the statistical part of it, is some people just look at this shiny new toy and dream on that 90th percentile, like you're talking about, and you're looking at the whole package where, at worst, and a lot of these guys, like, you know, Carrig, I believe, I'd have probably mispronounced it, that got called up by the Rockies. He's going to play for a while. Dude had 30 stolen bases in the minor leagues. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be elite, but it's one of those, like, to your point, if you need speed, okay, this could be interesting. Even if he only hits 250, like, he's going to run a ton in Colorado, at least he should. But, and I'm not saying people should go spend a lot of money on him. Please don't. But Yeah, just the example of the prospect part you're talking about. Like, you look at any prospect get called up, very few of them aren't running. And it's very interesting to see, and a great point that you made there. He's not on this list, but you mentioned his name. We don't have to deep dive him at all, but it's more just a kind of a philosophical lineup setting question. You mentioned Fernando Tatis Jr., and he hit his second home run of the season today on June 10th. So we're moving on up. I wasn't a Tatis guy. Some people love them. I'm not going to fault people for that. But some people just get blinded into it. We call it the Segura. And the difference is with Tatis, he's still hitting for average, and that's fine. But when you're looking to set your lineup each week, how do you go about a guy like Tatis, who you're like, I don't even know if I'm going to get a home run this week, let alone what else. And I might have, you know, so-and-so on the bench that has better matchups on paper. Does that ever change things for you? Or is it just like, I'm trusting Fernando Tatis Jr.?
You know, I think Tatis is pretty startable every week because that breakout's coming again back of the baseball card. You know, that Segura thing, I really tried to learn from that because I was right there. I started him for, I think, 4 weeks too long. I think a good example of that this year is Caleb Durbin. Yep. We drafted him high and we probably kept starting him, you know, thinking it was coming. And, you know, we just got to be really alert to where these guys are and who they are. Because Fernando Tatis is not going to end the season with four homers.
No.
Is he going to hit 30? No. But can he get to 20? I believe so. And, you know, if he goes 20, 30, you're not getting what you paid for, but he's going to be fine. So, yeah, to your question, Tatis, I'm starting every week, but we really got to pay attention to matchups, to projections for these more fringe guys as far as are they going to be startable or not? Because, again, it doesn't matter the name. And I know I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, but when you talk about a Fernando Tatis, I believe in the talent enough where the name matters versus that. And the projections are going to be right there with me. So, and that's usually the tiebreaker for me.
Yeah, and Tatis, like I said, still hit for average. Like the quality of contact metrics are still great. It's just it'll tweak. It's like maybe Jackson Merrill, his teammate's a better example. Like everyone's waiting for Jackson Merrill to be something, and it really isn't happening right now. So, or as Pat Monahan in the chat here said, he dropped Chandler Simpson. Yeah, if people look at Chandler's numbers, he's not running and not hitting for average right now. And if he's not doing either one of those, he's not helping you at all. So, like the drop is tricky for some, but the overall starting situation very, very much in play.
Yeah. You know, and one last thing on the rookies we're talking about, spending a lot of money on these guys is tough because the one thing that's definitely not guaranteed is playing time. And you mentioned it earlier in the pod is what we're looking for in Fab is playing time. They have no leash. They better produce or they're going to be on the bench or starting the platoon or even in the minors. So, you know, really be careful. And I'm trying to learn that lesson.
Yeah, I'm fully with you on that one. The playing time is clutch, and it's harder and harder, I think, because A, we see these shiny new toys. There's so many great people discussing the prospects, and the league has turned into a platoon situation. So it's almost like if I got a 4 out of 6 on the week, you're going, okay, this could work. Is it worth it? Different question, different show probably, but it does shift things a little bit. Last name I want to mention here, and this is more so because I think a lot of 12 teamers probably aren't even looking at Tristan Peters yet. 15 teamers, he's been on the radar. And he's still available in some leagues, but he's on the radar, at least. He's been down the waterfall, let's put it that way. And he's a guy I wish I had over some other options at this point in time. Tristan Peters, the former Savannah Banana, which is great to see. He is mashing it right now. In May, hit 303, 2 homers, 1 steal. So you see the 2 homers, 1 steal. Not ideal. It's a platoon situation, but that batting average is great in a 15. Like that plays in the right weeks where the playing time's there. There's questions about, you know, Pereira's coming back. They just called up Montgomery. That's another situation when it actually happens. A guy like Tristan Peters, we're like, we're seeing the productions there. It keeps picking up in recent weeks, but the playing time could be in question. So where are you at on a guy like Tristan Peters, I guess?
Do you, you said he's a platoon guy, but do you know what his WRC plus is against lefties?
And he's been playing more lately because of injuries. And I'm guessing by asking me that, it's pretty good.
Well, what's your definition of pretty good?
I'm going to say 122.
Against left-handed pitching, he's negative 29.
Okay, that's horrific. So you fooled me there. Well done. Well done. I was like, if he's asking me, it's got to be good. No, that is horrible.
Yeah, but 139 against righties. And so to your point, he's been really successful against righties. You know, good K rate. He's not barreling it, but valuable asset. Especially if you have, you know, 6-7 righties on the week. He's been a blind spot for me this year. You know, I've been cycling through outfielders. He has not even gotten to my waterfall. You know, there's not a lot of juice when it comes to the counting stats. There, like you said, the 2 homers, 1 steal. It's just not something I'm really interested in a fab, you know, especially in a week to week fab thing that I'm trying to do, because a good week, he's going to get you 7 hits and a couple RBIs and half a homer. You know, that's really not going to get to where you need to go. But I can see a scenario with all the injuries and needing him, you know, as an outfielder 6 or 7 that could be really valuable.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of where I'm sitting with him. And I guess I'll ask you this part then. It's the counting juice. Like, he's hitting for the average, which is great, but he's not stealing a lot of bags. He's not homering. It's like 11 runs, 12 RBIs. So it's like, okay, like, it's not elite by any means. The playing time's there, which we keep talking about. And he's actually starting versus lefties of late because of their injuries, which maybe we don't want him starting versus lefties, though, as you mentioned. But again, so you're talking 15s now. And people will talk about how hard it is to improve your average, especially as the season goes along. And team-by-team dependency, maybe you have a bunch of power guys, so this actually works. But maybe that's why Peters wasn't on your radar, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, does it take a certain profile? Like, you are looking at, you mentioned the stats you're looking at, the recent production. But is just, like, that batting average profile, does that kind of push them off the radar for you just because you need more from your players if you're starting them?
You know, it's probably a fault, Bubba. Because a guy that can hit 300 in today's climate, where 250 is in the top 30 of your league, it really can matter. You know, it always feels like I need power, and needing power and needing speed is just the worst feeling in the world. So I'd rather worry about my batting average last. And, you know, I forget who it was, but it was a really smart, I think might've been Lindy I was talking to, but you know, he doesn't worry about batting average as much because, you know, 3 hits on a given month might mean, you know, 20 points in batting average versus 3 hits that don't happen. And it's such a non-sticky stat out of the 5 counting categories that we're looking at that, you know, we're not going to say, you know, Kyle Schwarber's actually like a 240, 250 hitter now. He's not 210 anymore, but I'm not chasing batting average as much. It's more organic. You know, come August, when I'm looking at my team and there's an opportunity to shoot up the standings, that might be where I'm looking at, you know, plugging him in, you know, at least on a 4-game week or for, you know, first half of the week to try to get some extra batting average.
Perfect. Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering there, because like right now that empty batting average could set you back, whereas in, like you said, August, you have a better kind of stranglehold on something, hopefully, and you can kind of pick your battles at that point in time. All right, we'll go through a few. We might not go through all of these on the bad side of things, but Adelis Garcia, this is a guy that I know was dropped in a lot of leagues recently, and a lot of it's because, you know, April, not bad. 3 homers, 243. Like, you live with that with Adelis. May, .125. 1 home run, 1 stolen base. Like, this is beyond bad. Strikeouts through the roof. Heating up a little bit in June. I'll give him that. But a profile like Adelis Garcia's, how are we dealing with that? Because in 12s, like, I totally, like, you could send him to he was on a bunch of the OC waiver wires for me. But in a 15, again, it's tough to find certain production points. What are your thoughts on Adelis Garcia?
I dropped him in a 15 that I needed power in. I think he's done. I think we're looking at a small side platoon guy in the best case scenario for him. He's going to play every day because he's needed to. He's got a 43 WRC plus against righties. His K rate is up 8% this year. He's going to swing hard. He's going to run into a couple, but that's the type of profile that doesn't age well. And, you know, this list you sent over, one thing I noticed, other than Vientos and Adele, everyone's 32 and older. And, you know, age is undefeated. It comes at people in different times. There's guys that can be 36 and still producing, but you know, you lose one iota of speed or reflexes in this game and can you get it back? And so
I fully agree. There's like two things I want to ask you. First off, it's funny you mentioned the age thing, because Tuesday night, Ryan did a Bloom Board episode, and all the risers were young. All but like two of the followers were 32 or older. Mm-hmm. It was so funny to see. Like, you nailed exactly what you just said to a T. And there are a couple of these names, but a lot of them were different names than this. That's how bad things have been. The next thing I want to ask, it's a metric you didn't mention. And it's a new metric, and it's a tough metric to really understand what we should utilize it for, I guess. But maybe you could use it as like a seventh tiebreaker from what you're saying now, is the bat speed metric. Like, some guys are trying to compare season to seasons, in seasons. Is that something, like, again, as we evolve in our game of playing, could you see a world where, like, okay, you see a guy struggling, I'm going to go look at his bat speed. Maybe he's either hurt or just completely lost. Like, he's slowed down enough where you mentioned these guys are throwing gas, they're throwing spin like you've never seen before. The bat speed could be a big issue. Like, is that a thing that you're using or you're thinking about using anytime soon?
I'm really struggling with that metric. And, you know, preseason, I really wanted to use it because, you know, you look at the Blue Jays last year and almost across the board, every one of them went up in bat speed and they all had success because of it. But, you know, we watch Rafi Devers day in, day out. Bat speed's plenty good, right?
Yep.
You got to make contact.
True.
And, you know, bat speed's, we don't talk about how it's measured. You can just swing as hard as you want. You've run into one, great, but you got to adjust and, you know, swing and make contact. We were talking offline about Bryce Eldridge and his approach. You know, he's one of the few Giants hitters at two strikes, he shortens up. That's almost an anomaly in Major League Baseball nowadays. And it's so powerful and successful for the success of the baseball team when players do that. So I do struggle with bat speed. You almost can see to a person, if you're over 32, you're going to be declining. I mean, it's just a fact. So, you know, it's almost a guarantee in there. There's all this, the drive line stuff, and, you know, there's some correlation with that. But, you know, bat speed doesn't mean barrels. Bat speed equals exit velocity, max exit velocity. But we're already looking at that number, aren't we?
It's true. No, and that's why I wanted to have the discussion, because I'm with you. It's like, it's something I want to use more of. I did like a preseason kind of look of Ryan, maybe an improver, like a riser follower thing, is that you could maybe pick out a couple names, and like Nathan Church was on there and he's kind of improved. Like, is he a world beater? No, but like, yes, there's been improvements, but then there's also a bunch of guys that didn't matter at all. So to your point, and it's also one of those, if you look at the bat speed list, a lot of like the slowest guys, Arise, Jung Hoo Lee, all these guys that are hitting for average because they're slowing down, just putting the ball in play. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough metric, like to your point, to really get a grasp on what to utilize it for. So that's why I was curious on what you had there. Mark Vientos, I think I know the answer here, but I'm throwing it out there because there's some people that are still in love with this guy. And playing time has dwindled completely. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Are you dropping him everywhere right now?
He's a conundrum. Like, he's a fascinating profile. You know, his K rate's dropping, his barrel rate's sustaining, hits the ball hard, but he seems like a mental midget. I think, you know, there's the knucklehead factor that people talk about with players, but there's also, you know, are you a dude? You got to be a dude to succeed in professional baseball, and he doesn't seem like he has it. I picked up, I'm a Jared Young fan. Yes, I picked him up a lot of places this week. And I believe he's now the strong side of that platoon. Viento still hits lefties, and he's going to play against lefties, and he can get hot or have another injury. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 20 something homers this year, but it's going to be really, really bad stretches. So, I will be dropping him if I had him anywhere. I do not have him anywhere. I got outbid during the Fabs, and then, you know, I did not pick him up. So I had him in some 12s. He's long gone on those, though.
Yeah, that's one of those where I was actually looking back now, glad I did not win those Fab bids. Like, it's always the kind of the ones you win, you wonder, then the ones you don't win. Well, this one's the one I'm glad I did not win. Thank goodness. You're talking about the elderly here, and you mentioned him earlier because he doesn't like all the StatCast numbers people throw out these days, but Manny Machado. This is one of those guys where I'm really interested on your thoughts, because we talk about back of the baseball card, and he's been one of the most consistent players year after year after year after year when it comes to statistics. But when we're looking like at his month of May, he hit 127. He did not steal a base. He hit 6 home runs, which, okay, that's nice. He's only hitting 153 with one home run through the first 8 games of June. hit 222 with four home runs. And like, it's just been a rough go is the best way I can put it for Machado. And maybe he's hurt. That's always possible with him. But when you're looking at this kind of profile, again, tough to replace a third baseman in 15s, but are you still holding on and believing that we're going to see this guy, the guy we once knew, or is there actual concern here?
You know, maybe it's me being stubborn, but he's a back of the baseball card for me. He's earned it, and I would not be shocked the rest of June he goes nuts or into July. He's going to have a hot month unless he is hiding an injury. You know, the K rate's up 3.5%, barrel rate's down almost 5%. There's some concerning numbers in there, but, you know, we're not even halfway through a season yet. And again, ebbs and flows. And we know how these Machado's Dominican. I don't want to misspeak on that. We'll talk about the players, whether Venezuelan, Dominican, they like the warmer weather. Not that San Diego's cold, but when it heats up, that's when they tend to heat up. Yeah. And so
Dominican.
Yeah, I guarantee if we look at Machado's splits throughout his career that you're going to see first half's worse than the second half, like the Julio Rodriguez. But he is 33 turning 34. Again, that age monster. One thing I can probably say is the speed's going to probably continue to slow down. You know, that last year steals is probably not going to be repeated, but I don't think he's going to hit under 200 this year, if that, you know, is the question. And I'm still going to be rolling him out there just like Tatis.
Just for fun, I guess now, who do you think has a better rest of the season? I know one's hitting really well now, but would you think Chapman or Machado? Because on paper, Machado is the better long-term guy, but Chapman's swinging it right now.
What team does Chapman end up on?
We got to go there, don't we? maybe he ends up in San Diego. Yeah, no, I think there's a team in the Bronx that could use a third baseman.
I think we do Jason Dominguez for Matt Chapman right now. Make it happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not opposed to that because he can cut off all the salary, let the Yankees take it on, or maybe whatever. Yeah, that's interesting.
But give me Machado 100 times out of 100 with that, Bubba.
And I know you're trolling me on Jason Dominguez, so it's okay. Seiya Suzuki, this is one of those, like, I know – like the older Machados and everything, they've been talked about a lot. But say it, this one surprised me when I made this list, is what I'll say. Because he had a monster first month of the season. He had 328. We saw five homers. Things were great. In May, he hit a .190 with only two home runs. I know he was a little banged up, but he played 28 games. So it's not like he was on the IL. He's heating up a little bit in June. So it's kind of been a good, bad, good situation. I'm a huge Seiya fan, so I just been running him out there, and this is why I just wanted to bring it up for people that maybe didn't even realize how bad things got for a second there. Any concerns on Seiya Suzuki?
No, I mean, the research I did, he didn't really belong on this list. You know, the concerning number on here is the barrel rates in half, but he didn't have a spring training because the injury in the WBC, and so, you know, he came out on fire. And I it's probably due to injury. That's the thing that's scary with Seiya. He's always battling an injury, and he's trying to play through it. But he, you know, it's underrated, but Wrigley has become a pretty severe pitcher's park. It seems like the wind's blowing in there almost every game. And until that switches, you know, those months when he's home a lot might be tough. And, you know, you obviously got the random ones where it's blowing out, but it really feels like Wrigley's, the wind is just consistently blowing in.
It's a great point because, like we mentioned, Michael Busch at the start of the show, I told you I looked at the first half, second half last year for the entire season, let alone the first half, second half. He had better power on the road last year than at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there is a lot to be said about that one. All right, last player I want to ask you about here because we actually have some fun listener questions I want to get your thoughts on, and we'll kind of divert from things a bit. But, we're going with the elderly of the group here, George Springer. And yes, he's been on the IL with a foot injury, could still be injured. That's fine. But I think this production's even worse than that. I'm just going to sum it all up. He's hitting .204 on the season with five home runs. Where are we at on George Springer? Because he's coming off that monster season. And again, maybe not a cut, but I don't know if you could start him either.
Sure seems like an outlier. Last year's numbers. Obviously when he was young on Houston, he had it. Last year really came out of nowhere. And, you know, if you look at the last 5 years now, this might be who George Springer is. Battling injury, we don't know as far as when he's healthy, you know, he's going to be better than he is right now because he's been abysmal. But he, I didn't see what people were expecting getting the numbers last year. I mean, the K rate sustained, but you know, the barrel rate the last 5 years was to go 22 was 8.3, 23, 7.7, 24, 9.2, and then 25, 15.8. And then now we're back to 7.7. Name the outlier. Maybe they were beating garbage cans in Toronto, Bubba. Maybe that's why they were so good last year. Or they had the buzzer on them. I mean,
the buzzer.
You know, it's pretty crazy to see that drop. You know, his first year in Toronto was 15.3, but you know, he's 36 years old now. And his max exit velocity is down 5 miles an hour, hard hits down 11%. Again, he hasn't been healthy, so this can turn around, but I would bet on it not turning around to the level that he was.
Full agree on that. Last question I have before the listener questions, and it's really broad and it could go a million different directions, and if it's insane, just say so. But so we've talked about like these guys really producing well of late, some guys struggling, back of the baseball cards, all these things, like certain guys like a Tatis, a Vladito, guys that you drafted that are underperforming what your draft expectations were, but you're still, you know, you're living with, we talk about Acuna, like you're not dropping him, but he's obviously not going to meet your expectations from what you drafted. So when you draft, a lot of people use projections and you see where you are, and then you adjust in season via FAP. That's the name of the game. How are you, I guess, like if things are slow and you got like a Vlad or a Fernando Tatis and you're not dropping them by any means and you're starting them every week, but you know you're behind the eight ball now, I guess, how aggressive are you in just attacking things now? Are you still like knowing we have like 3.5 months to go? You need all your dollars. There's going to be plenty of fab. Are you still focused on the week to week grind, I guess? Or is it more like I need to go hard now? And if I'm out of it by the end of like the next month, it's really a problem.
It depends on the team. If I'm sitting pretty far down there and I need to make a big move, what I look at, usually a pitcher injury will make me kind of overreact to a pitcher and, you know, pay the $300 for the Tole, or, you know, Cade Anderson comes or Hunter Green, you know, but it's still week to week grind. I never give up. I never, you know, blow it and try to do that. It's one of those things that it's still grinding. And as nice as it is to kind of clean out your fab on leagues that you don't really have a chance in, so you can kind of claim I don't need to look at them as closely. You know, I signed up to really compete and to do that. It's funny, I actually have an auction team. I'm in third in the league with Vladdy, Tatis, Taylor Ward, and injured Ellie.
Dude, that's got to make you feel pretty good about things if things turn around right there.
I mean, regression, right? I somehow have 50 hitting points and 42 pitching points.
Good God. Like, who's the standout?
Dylan effing Dingler.
Ah, he's amazing. Love he's that, been man.
So good, dude.
So good. So another double dong the other day. Good Lord. Like, unbelievable. But that's how you got to do it.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. Yeah, but, you know, that team... You know, Xavier Edwards has been good. It's just that I don't know why the hitting's as good as it is. William Contreras, Dylan Dingler combo has been pretty nice. So, but, you know, that's that regression thing. If you can stay healthy and keep that pitching on the upward trend, you have a chance now to really make some noise as these guys kind of regress back to their norms.
Most definitely. All right, couple questions here. We got one from YouTube, and then we'll go to the Discord here. Pat says, couple Sal questions. Sal Stewart's OPS is 110 points lower at third base versus first base, and much worse at second base, albeit minuscule sample. One, is this noise? Like, basically, you know, some guys play different positions. Two, Eugenio being garbage, is that going to push Stewart to third base more often? Just pure speculation.
You know, I mean, the Reds starting the year wanted Stewart at first base, Eugenio at DH, and Cabrian Hayes at third base. I don't think they really want Stewart playing third base. They're doing it because of Nathaniel Lowe, not Suarez, getting his bat in the lineup. Man, it's amazing how Sal Stewart hasn't been heard from since
after that
April.
Start. Yeah, and he should have been on this list probably.
Yeah. But again, he's a heck of a hitter. I think it is underrated, and it's pretty amazing watching the Giants and what Casey Schmidt's doing is these young guys learning new positions in the majors while trying to hit. It's got a weigh on them, and I think they should put Stewart back at first and kind of eat the defense as Suarez at third base. and then put low at DH against righties. But it'll be interesting to kind of see what they do because the Reds have not shown the inclination to treat their top prospects well defensively. as far as, you know, there's, you know, who was the guy? Not Matt McClain. It was the guy before him. That it's number two overall pick. They played in center field. That was an infielder.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I want to say Solak, but that's not right.
They tried to play McClain in center too to top it off.
It's just amazing. They haven't learned.
And now they got Noelvi Marte in the outfield. I'm not saying that's the reason why, but like that was a third baseman as well.
So that's steroids.
Well played. All right, let's get to the Discord here because now we're going to go back and forth between maybe some baseball, but primarily golf right now. This guy, Ryan Bloomfield, has a question for you. Bloomer lives in the Pacific Northwest, of course. Booms is a very, very, very good golfer, folks. So Ryan wants to know, what's the best golf course you played in the Pacific Northwest, excluding Bandon?
Bandon.
Yeah, I'm glad he put that, though, because that's like the answer even I, who haven't played it, would probably tell you.
You know, I actually haven't played a lot up there. Growing up, played some in Oregon, Crosswater, I believe. But, man, Bandon, anybody that likes golf at all, you have to get there. It is a special, special place on earth. It's all golf, all hang, and more golf. It is just the coolest spot. And I think reservations are now 18 months out. So plan ahead.
It's a lot of lottery now too, which sucks.
But it is worth the money to get there. I cannot stress enough how good Bandon is.
Yeah. There's a couple of, like, I've started doing a golf trip recently and that's on the list. We just have to somehow get chosen to make it work. But we've been doing a lot of like Scottsdale's. We're going up to outside of Reno, Truckee coming up here in a little bit. Like there's so many everywhere you can play. I want to go to Wisconsin badly.
It's so good. Truckee's a special place too. I love it up there.
A lot of good stuff up there. I'll have to talk to you off air and tell you where I'm going. It's pretty sweet. Everybody, Scott Slezak, some people know him from his Main Event to Success. He wants to know, I know the answer to this, but he does not know. How did you get the nickname Booms? There's got to be a good story, and it's a good story. So I'll let you have the floor here.
It is a good story. When I started playing golf, I hit it hard, but didn't always go straight. So my nickname was Boom Boom, once for when I hit the ball, once for when it hit the tree. once I hit it straighter and started hitting fairways, it just shortened to Booms.
Love it. And then I heard you need to call Elon or something to get it changed to 61, correct?
Yeah, broke my Boom 62 handle. I shoot in 61. I think it was into January. Did not see that coming, but switched to the broomstick putter and really? Yes, I'm an old man now, so don't want to bend over as much
around, but here you're in friendly company.
Had the best putting round of my life and shot my lowest round ever, shot 61 at my home course at Green Valley.
Oh, nice. Even better home course. Almond has a question here. What do we think about Braden Montgomery in a 12-team points league? Like I said, Braden, it's been two games. It's been two impressive games since he's been called up. And it looks like we talked about earlier, do the prospects get playing time? It seems like he might get it. Again, it's only two games. Sunday we'll know more. But what are your thoughts? 12-team points league for Braden Montgomery.
You know, 12-teamers shoot for the moon. You said that earlier. I agree with that. You have to be really careful with the White Sox. They love Everson Pereira. They absolutely love him. And so I could see, I got to check, you know, Peters and Montgomery, if they're both lefty righty, or that might be a platoon option. But I think Pereira is going to play when he comes back. I don't know what that means for Montgomery, but I love how the White Sox have pushed their prospects. I wish more teams did it. And I think it's worth taking a look. But luckily, by the time we have to pick Fab on Sunday, we'll have a lot more information about where this stands.
Braden's a switch hitter, which is huge. Peters could platoon, but I don't know if Pereira could play center is the problem. So there will be some moving parts there for sure. We'll have to keep an eye on that. And then Martin Sikulski says, what player does Booms have the most shares of that has hurt him the most in 2026?
Oh, that has hurt me the most. I guess it's Robbie Ray. I was really, really in on Robbie. The velocity uptick in spring training, You know, he's throwing 94. That's what he was throwing when he had the Cy Young season. I picked him on a contract year. I really thought that he was going to have a big year. I mean, I wasn't expecting a Cy Young, but I got him everywhere in the 10th, 11th round, got him everywhere for $8 to $10 in the auction. And I was just stoked to get him. And he's been bad and his underlying's been worse. You know, he finally didn't walk anybody today and the bullpen kind of screwed him, gave up five runs. I think we're turning a little corner, but he's, I think I have him on four out of the seven big teams I have.
That's that'll do it. And shocker, the bullpen didn't pitch well. I'll be nice though. Who do you have the most shares of that's helped you this year?
Well, I thought my Willier Abreu love, I have 70% of him throughout all my leagues, was going to be perfect, but he cooled off a lot. You know, it's pretty well balanced across it. I can't think off the top of my head one guy that I own that's been just amazing. But it's just, the research I did, especially in the auctions, and I was able to specifically pick the guys I wanted to, has been pretty successful this far. So really happy on the road I'm on with that. Need to really kind of continue to get better to compete, and, you know, really would love a chance to take down one of these overalls someday. So long ways off from that.
You got a couple teams that can make a run still. Like you got a good start to the year here in those auctions. And you said one thing that has made me fall in love with auctions more and more every single season is being able to just get the guys you want. Like a snake draft gets so boring after doing auctions because you're just at the mercy of the ADP, it feels like. And you can still make good teams, don't get me wrong, but you can also get screwed pretty quickly at the same time. Or at least an auction, you can pivot. You can do, like, if you do your research, there's ways to make things work. And it's a night and day. Beautiful situation. Glad I've finally gotten that thing going. But all right, we're going to wrap it up there, man. Always a pleasure chatting with you. Really enjoyed all of this. I guess, do you want to let people know where they can find you? And you'll be on the airwaves one of these days soon, hopefully.
Yeah, and the FTN podcast with Vlad Sedler, Roto Gut. We try to do a weekly show. Our lives are a little hectic right now, so we'll get one back out soon. Don't post much on Twitter, so you know, really don't look for me there. But love talking baseball, love doing this, Bubba. Really appreciate you having me on. And you know, it's nice to see you in the 15 team streets and you're becoming a masochist like the rest of us, and that's what golfers are too. So Ryan gets it. But you know, there's some sort of evil, you know, pleasure we get out of the, you know, the pain in the 15 teams versus the 12.
It is like 12s I love just because there's always replacements, but it's almost a bad thing at times when you're doing that. Where the 15, you got to put the work in, and when it actually works, it feels that much better. Like, okay, this is cool. So there's a lot to be said about that. Yes. And I'm starting to really enjoy it for now. Obviously this year's learning experience is a learning experience, but hey, we're having a good time doing it. It's been awesome to check out. So looking forward to chatting again, looking forward to seeing you continue to move up the standings on the overalls and everything. It's, I check those out about once a week just to see where my boys are at. And it's good to see, but thanks for joining me, man. And we'll have to chat again sometime.
Absolute pleasure, Bubba. Thanks for having me, dude.
All right, everybody, this is Benched with Bubba, episode 860 with our good buddy, Jason Anthony. Catch y'all next time.